Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Hey, warm welcome to you this afternoon. It's 4 minutes after the hour, and it is today is summer solstice. It's the longest day of the year. It is June 21st, so enjoy maximum light to this day. It's going to be, I think the solstice was at 6:07 Eastern time this morning, and it's going to stay light the longest today, so live it up. All right, a little bit of sad news. Coco, the sign language gorilla, passed away at age 46. His last message to his fans was in his diary and said, "I can't believe people fell for that sign language gag." Oh, so sweet. No, Coco could read the sign language, but obviously Coco was not smart enough to get out of the vacation timeshare he signed up for. So anyway, we're very sad that he's gone, but you know what? Another piece of good news is people do care, and there's a New York family that is thanking the Rhode Island State Police for searching for their four-year-old's beloved cheetah stuffed animal. Don't you love that? Dad sent him a letter saying the animal fell out of the car as they were driving through the state, and believe it or not, the state troopers looked for that little cheetah, but no avail. But months later, the family received a package postmarked from the Rhode Island troopers, and in it was a brand new stuffed cheetah. So it's nice that people care, that people do stuff that are really nice for people. That's sweet. All right, we have a great, great show. Dr. Rona Epstein is going to be with us in just a minute. We're going to be talking about her new book called Satisfied, A 90-Day Spiritual Journey Toward Food Freedom. And are you basically, you know, satisfied with your relationship with food? Because if you're not, you're going to want to stay tuned. And as you know, I love on the show as much scripture read by as many people as possible. And here's a little treat. Joanne is going to recite John 3:16 in Chinese. And that's just going to be a little foreshadow of what's coming up in the second half hour today. Dr. Brent Fulton will be with us. He's been serving as a missionary in China for over 30 years. Here it is.
John 3:16 in Chinese. 神爱世人，甚至将他的独生子赐给他们，叫一切信他的，不至灭亡，反得永生。
God is always ready to give you another chance. Hi, I'm Dick Whitmer, General Manager of Faith Radio. The Bible says that we've all been irresponsible and missed the mark. But the free gift of God is eternal life in Jesus Christ our Lord. Pastor Rick Warren says guilt destroys our confidence, damages our relationships, keeps us stuck in the past, and even can hurt our health. But God doesn't want us to live there. Plus, He's provided a way out, and it's so simple. Admit that we have sinned. It won't shock Him or change His love for you. Repent and turn to God. And according to His word, you can expect complete forgiveness. And it happens instantaneously. No waiting periods to see if everything works out all right. Faith Radio is here to share God's good news. And part of it is coming to realize that God not only forgives us, but He frees us from the guilt and shame that comes with our mistakes. Thank you for praying and supporting this ministry. Together, we are making a difference for Christ. God bless you.
Welcome back. It's 7 minutes after the hour. Dr. Rona Epstein is a licensed psychologist, a certified addictions counselor, and a marriage and family therapist. She has written a book called Satisfied, A 90-Day Spiritual Journey Toward Food Freedom. And she's on our studio line with us this afternoon. Hi, Rona.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm still transitioning from mornings to afternoons, so I'm still making mistakes like wishing you good morning at 5 o'clock in the afternoon your time.
Well, good afternoon.
Thank you so much.
It's evening.
I know. It's almost dinner time for you. You're out on the East Coast. Now, new book you've written, you've been thinking about this your whole life, haven't you?
I have, yes.
And you've got a great story because you have, from a very young age, had a little bit of an issue with sugar as a kid, which kind of turned into an addiction with food.
Right. You've got that straight. I had a pretty bad addiction to food. And then I got into recovery when I was in my late teens. And then I spent the rest of my whole adult life helping other people get out of food addictions. And that's where this book came out of. Yeah.
Now, tell our listeners a little bit.
The nutshell version.
Yeah. Tell the listeners a little bit about your recovery and how you got into recovery and then also started to hear about God's grace and goodness and Jesus, because growing up in a Jewish family, that was, you didn't recognize Jesus as the Messiah?
That's true. Well, basically, I was really out of control with food, to like a binge eating, bulimic, just really out of control. And for anybody who's been through any sort of addiction, you understand it's sort of a progressive problem and kind of grows and grows if you don't do anything about it, which is what happened. The problem grew and I grew. And when I was in my senior year of high school, I was thinking about dying pretty much every day because it was so bad. And somehow I ended up in a 12-step program by the grace of God. And it was there that I was exposed to the spiritual principles of the 12 steps, which made me start thinking about God, even though I did think about God in my Jewish life, mm-hmm. which I did grow up. I grew up as a conservative Jew, which we weren't really religious. I say our family was sort of bagels and lox Jewish. We weren't. Not religious, mm-hmm. but I went to Hebrew school and I went to, you know, did the bat mitzvah and the whole thing, but we weren't religious. But we definitely ate bagels and lox and did the holidays and those sorts of things. But anyway, the whole thing of God in a personal way, that wasn't a part of my life, or praying in a personal way, praying to God for peace or praying to God to know him or for help or any of those things. That wasn't a part of my life. But when you're desperate and broken, you know, basically, what did I have to lose, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I took the recommendations of Christians that this was way later. It took me years to get to the place of being open to Jesus. But after a couple of years of falling on my face and trying to get better, I was introduced to Jesus by people who were bold enough to share the Lord with me. And I was having trouble and it wasn't working. And someone suggested I try believing in Jesus. And I said, okay, why not?
Mm-hmm.
So kind of went like that.
I love it.
I was trying on different forms of spirituality, I guess you could say. I was trying to find God and reading different spiritual readings and pursuing spiritual things before that I ended there. So it wasn't like I just went right there. I did try to visit different places of worship and listen to different spiritual people, and just kind of that's where I ended up. But being Jewish, it was really difficult to believe in Jesus, mm-hmm. I do have to say. But ultimately, it was through faith and believing, and I don't want to make it really that simple, because having a food addiction, it's not like, oh, I prayed to Jesus and I became a believer and then poof, my food addiction went away. If everybody who was a believer in Jesus just got over their addictions that easy, it would be great, wouldn't it?
That would be great.
Yeah, it would be great. But you know, I still needed help. But that really did help a lot, because it was really the love of God ultimately that broke the chains of, mm-hmm. of the addiction. But so I really needed that. That ultimately I needed that. But I also needed a lot of other tools and skills and tools and help to break free from my own addiction.
Rona, is food addiction one of the trickiest addictions out there? Because we all want to change the way we feel, and reaching for food is probably the easiest way to self-medicate.
Absolutely. It's so easy, and it's everywhere. You can't even go anywhere. I mean, people who are trying to break free, you can't even go to Staples to buy paper. It's like right at the counter.
Oh, I know.
You can't go anywhere. There's temptations are everywhere. Everywhere you go, there's signs luring you in to try this new thing and try that thing. You can't go to the drugstore to get the things you need. You can't go anywhere. Temptations everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So the church is probably, one of the worst places because we all close our eyes and blink our eyes on the gluttony part of the Bible.
we
pretend that's not there. I think it's very easy to act like that's not really as big of a problem as other problems. We take drug addiction and alcohol addiction very seriously, and we tend to not take food addiction seriously. But if you sat in my office and heard about how food addiction tears people's lives up, you would have a totally different – I mean, people's lives are being ruined.
Oh, sure.
Ruined.
Yeah. So – Rona, is there a part of your brain that when it's activated or cortisol dumps out of your brain that your body goes into this now I'm craving salt and grease mode?
Different people crave different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, not some people crave salt and grease. Some people crave sugar.
Okay. I was just wondering if there was a physiological response that we go through throughout our day that's based on stress, that after a surge of stress, something physiologically happens which makes us crave certain foods.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
Yeah.
I think I'm sure that's why a lot of people make resolutions in the morning that they're going to, I think a lot of people who are dieting or trying to be healthy will start off their day on the right foot, going to do this, and this, and then as the day wears on and the stresses and you get tired and then you start to lose your resolve and it's harder to stick. I think being tired and stressed does not help.
Mm-hmm. I want to take a very short break, and when we come back, more with Dr. Rona Epstein. If you have a question, please call 877-933-2484, 877-93-FAITH, and you can ask Rona anything you like. When I come back, Rona, I want to ask about your book. I want to continue questions about Satisfied, a 90-day spiritual journey toward freedom. And I want to ask you about letting go of self-condemnation. Be back in just a minute. Minutes after the hour, Dr. Rona Epstein is my guest. She's a licensed psychologist, certified addictions counselor, marriage and family therapist. And we're talking about her new book, which is called Satisfied, a 90-day spiritual freedom journey towards freedom. And as I'm just kind of looking through the 90 days, Rona, I came across letting go of self-condemnation. And it seems that you say you would never allow someone to speak to a family member or a loved one the way you talk to yourself. How true is that?
Very true. So, yeah. Well, actually, most of the people I work with who struggle with overeating have a tremendous amount of self-hatred. And I think that what happens is that actually ends up fueling the food addiction. You wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and then find all fault with your different parts of your body that you're not liking and pick. And then just starts off the day on the wrong foot. And that kind of just leads down the road to, the condemnation just makes you feel depressed and anxious. And, of course, if a person really is struggling with weight, you can't really fix that overnight. That sometimes can take time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just sitting there feeling so overwhelmed and despairing, and then all you do is look at the parts that you don't like, and then just feel like a failure, there's no hope in that. It just ends up just being so discouraging. And so it's just you just start off on the wrong foot every day.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think in the reading there, it says, you know, you wouldn't talk to somebody else. I mean, that's just no way to get yourself motivated. That doesn't work. And I ask my clients this all the time. I always say, well, do you find it at all helpful to say those negative things to yourself? Like, have you ever found once, ever, that you felt motivated or encouraged or inspired by any of those condemning thoughts? Ever once?
Yeah, I can predict the answer.
Right. Never once.
Never once.
Mm-hmm. And so, right, never once. It's not helpful. It's mm-hmm. not, and even if the person can, you know, will try to convince me, but it's true. But, you know, I would say back, and we'll have many convincing conversations about this, even if it was true that you didn't like this or that part of your body, it still isn't doing you any good to pick on it. So I think, you know, we really need to take a look at how can we stop doing that, because it's hurting you and it's not helping you.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you can neutralize your thoughts and quit that mean, spirited, condemning way of thinking and try to find something more kind and encouraging, that might help bring you more towards, getting you motivated, and people feel more motivated to change from a positive place, not from a place of condemnation. Condemnation shuts you down. It freezes people, makes you feel more unlikely to change, I think.
Mm-hmm. Rona, what are some self-defeating things that we do?
Condemnation.
Pardon? Well, besides condemnation, I'm thinking.
Besides condemnation.
Yeah, maybe I should reframe the question. What about habits, healthy habits we can have? If somebody says, well, I ate a pint of ice cream last night, and I go, well, all right, so you must have had a pint of ice cream in your fridge. So maybe we start wise choices we make at the grocery store.
Right. Well, exactly. And, you know, and you make a very good point. You know, people who have made up their minds and determined that they are going to work on, like I said, I treat food addiction. So, of course, I work with people who are trying to figure out what kind of problem they have and what they need to work on. So some people need to get rid of ice cream altogether because they can't handle it,
mm-hmm.
like can't have it without eating the pint. You know, if a person can eat a scoop of ice cream, then, you know, good for them. But some of the people that I work with can't eat a scoop. They eat the whole thing, and
mm-hmm.
a pint probably wouldn't even do it for most of my clients.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, having it in the house, you're right, is dangerous. So that's definitely self-defeating. And even, you know, some of the things to teach people, like a young client that I'm working with now, you know, she says she has to have it in the house for her family, her kids. And I'm like, well, do you really? You know, could you take your kids out for a treat and let them get single serving when they want a treat rather than keeping, you know, all that stuff in the house for
mm-hmm.
them? You know, because really, why do you need to have it there?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be the one ending up binging on it, it's not, you know, who's it really there for?
Right. A little self-denial,
you know,
there,
what
maybe?
I'm saying. Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's just being honest. Like, you know, we're buying junk food for our kids, but if you're ending up binging on it, then it's not really, you don't need it there for your kids.
Mm-hmm. So,
by the way, your kids don't need it either.
That's true. So if you're listening right now and you've got physical and emotional exhaustion because you know that you're not probably giving your body the right food it needs to function well and feel good, what would be step one as early as like tonight?
The first, what does a person do to get started?
Yeah, let's say I'm in a stuck mode. And I'm physically and emotionally exhausted from this whole idea of, you know, the eating issues, but I know that I need to change. I'm not eating right, so I don't have energy. And all right, you now have my attention. What should I do tonight?
Right. Well, I say go get the book Satisfied.
Right.
And,
that's step one.
You got to have the whole toolbox. I say both my books, but because Food Triggers explains all about the nuts and bolts of food addiction and food abuse. And then Satisfied is a 90-day jumpstart devotional. So the two of them together are a really good package. But I'm joking, sort of, but not really.
Because no, of course you're not. They're great resources.
A lot. Yeah, they're great resources. But to answer the question, I mean, obviously, I think, you know, it's the first where we start with any problem is you have to recognize you have a problem. You're not going to do anything about it till you admit it. And let's be honest. And then we have to figure out what do you need to do for help and what's going to be your tools. Because the bottom line is that if you're going round and round, and here's where this is like one of the biggest challenges I think that people have, is that most people think they can fix this by themselves. And then they tell themselves to themselves, I'm going to do something different. And then they make up plans in their head. And most of it's just fantasy. I'm going to do this, this, and this. And here's their new job. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to exercise. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to blah, 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 blah. And it's all in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And the plans never get past that fantasy because they have no way of implementing that plan on their own, and they can't follow through. And then they hate themselves because they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all the whole thing's going on inside their head. And the challenging thing is admitting that we need help. So when you ask what's the first thing is that I get facing the fact that, like, I'm probably not going to do this unless I get help.
Mm. So we need to admit that we have a problem and we need to find help, and then probably need to get some accountability going in our lives.
Exactly.
And yeah. So if we look at trying to make a change as early as today, we can start by doing some personal reflecting to say, yes, I've got a problem. I've got to do something about it. I need to get help, and I need to read Rona's books, and I need to get some accountability.
Exactly. And it's got to, and I think that it's finding the kind of help that, like, other people who have been down this road, who know the way out, you know, it can't just be like just anybody.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's somebody, you know, it's people who are going to really be there, who really understand, who will really walk this out. Because, you know, we can say to a friend, okay, I'm going to start to eat better now. And, you know, we know who's going to really walk with us.
Mm-hmm.
And who's going to be to, we can't put it into somebody else's hands to be police for us.
Right.
Or expect them to be in charge of this. It's just never going to work.
Yeah.
You know, we really have to think about putting together a support system that'll work. And that can be a challenge, finding the right people.
Yeah, Rona, you're so comforting. I appreciate your tone, and I love your material, and I just thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Dr. Rona Epstein has been my guest. Her book, Satisfied, A 90-Day Spiritual Journey Toward Freedom. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute.
It's time to defund Planned Parenthood. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Planned Parenthood is spending a lot of money defending itself in two lawsuits alleging they covered up child abuse. Now, you might think, well, good, I hope they bleed themselves dry, but we're paying for this legal defense. That's because, of course, we're still waiting for the Republican-held House of Representatives to fulfill its pledge to defund Planned Parenthood. Live Action reports that one girl was 14 when her 21-year-old soccer coach got her pregnant and took her to Planned Parenthood for an abortion. Planned Parenthood broke the law by failing to notify her parents of the abortion or getting their written consent, and by failing to notify authorities of the suspected sexual abuse of a child. It's all part of Live Action's video series, Aiding Abusers, Planned Parenthood's cover-up of child sexual abuse. Come to Breakpoint.org to find it. Again, that's Breakpoint.org. And then send the link to your members of Congress. And keep your eye out for a new Breakpoint podcast with Live Action President Lila Rose. I'm John Stone Street.
Welcome back to the show. I have in studio Brent Fulton, or I should say Dr. Brent Fulton. He's the founder and president of China Source and the editor-in-chief of China Source Quarterly. What does that mean? We're going to find out in just a minute. Brent holds an MA and PhD degrees in political science from the University of Southern California and a BA in radio, TV, film from Messiah College. He's author of many books, and he has been living in China for 33 years, I think, approximately. Welcome to the show, Brent.
Thank you.
So did I get that right? Is it 33 years?
33 years involved in China. I first went to Hong Kong in the mid-80s. Okay. I was there for a couple of years. And then my wife and I moved back to Hong Kong in 2006, and we're there for 11 years. And now we're back in the States, but really back and forth to China for the last 33 years.
So my first question is, did you show up speaking the language?
No, I didn't. I showed up.
You're
as
a brave man.
Short-term assignment that had turned into a very long-term assignment.
What was that assignment?
Originally working with a group in Hong Kong that was doing research on the church in China and doing some editing of their English language publications. But it began learning Chinese once I got there. So I lived with a family from China who didn't speak any English, and that was a great way to start.
I don't even know how you do that. That's really baptism by fire, isn't it?
It was. Yeah. It was fun.
So the last 33 years you've been involved in China, you lived in Hong Kong for how long?
First of all, 2 years, and then again after that, 11 years from 2006 to about 2017.
Okay. So now the question that is begging is, what's going on in China?
Well, it's complicated.
Yeah. I got time.
Yes.
Yeah.
China's enjoyed really 30-plus years of continuing to open up to the outside world, and that's given people, including Christians in China, more freedom to live their lives and express their faith. But since President Xi Jinping came into power in 2012, we've seen things begin to tighten up as the party realizes that they've kind of been losing control of a lot of aspects of society and now are wanting to regain that control. So that's having the impact on people's lives in China today.
You know, Brent, I think I remember hearing that Xi Jinping wanted to have – was it pictures of himself in everybody's home, or he wants all the crosses taken down and any religious symbols completely removed? I mean, he got kind of heavy-handed, didn't he?
Well, in some places. There was one province where the government really went after crosses because it's a province that had a lot of Christians. There were a lot of churches there. And they felt they were just too visible and there was too many of them.
Okay.
So they went after them. But that was only one place in China.
Okay. So let's delve into some of China's economic concerns, if you wouldn't mind sharing about the struggle that is, especially the impact it has around the globe.
Well, China has achieved economically what no other nation in history has achieved, long-term economic growth over literally decades and lifting hundreds of millions of people out of poverty. So China's economic miracle, as some people call it, is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you've got to keep it going. And so the government has raised people's expectations about opportunity, about the ability to get a job and make money. But how do you keep that going long term? The original model was manufacturing. So China became the world's factory floor. And they had millions of people spilling from the countryside into the cities to find work in factories, and that worked. But now they're all there. China is no longer competitive as it was as a manufacturing center. So now they're trying to move to more information-based economy and service-based economy. And that's been a delicate balance to keep the economy humming and make that transition.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, if something I bought had made in China on it, it was cheap.
It's still cheap,
okay.
But that's not like it used to be.
Yeah.
China and the other countries are more competitive when it comes to the manufacturing. China's trying to kind of move up the ladder in terms of the sophistication of the things that it produces, getting into cars, electric cars, more advanced electronics, things like that. So there is definitely an economic shift taking place.
Well, people in China are – maybe this is my perception. You can shed light on this. Seem to be very hardworking, industrious people with a huge work ethic. Is that true?
I think by and large that's true.
Okay.
And you had the incentive of being able to go from the countryside to the cities and just have a really kind of a new life by making more money, getting a good job. That's been an incredible driver for people in China.
Mm-hmm. So, Brent, what about the country now politically? I know that's probably a loaded question. Maybe I should have asked that with less time remaining in the interview. But what is going on politically?
Well, you do have this shift towards a more authoritarian government. Under Xi Jinping, the party's trying to reassert its power in areas of society that have kind of been let go or gotten away. And so Xi Jinping, I think the most remarkable thing is the way he's consolidated his power. There were kind of different voices in the party in the mid-2000s, late 2000s, before Xi Jinping came along. There was some dialogue. There was some debate about issues. But under Xi, he's really consolidated the power unto himself. And there are very few people around him that really have a lot mm-hmm. of real power. So that's been a new twist. He also got rid of term limits.
Mm.
And so traditionally, a Chinese president could serve 2 5-year terms. And Xi Jinping in March did away with that. So he is
– Did anyone vote on that or did he just decide?
Well, the National People's Congress takes a vote. But
okay.
Not
he
a lot
decides.
Of, right. He
yeah.
decides.
Are you surprised that it's swinging back to being more restrictive?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I think depends on your time frame. If you look at China in the last 30 or so years, you would say, wow, this is a real shift because things were moving towards becoming more open and now it seems like we're going backwards.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at China over the last 3,000 years, China always has had a strong authoritarian government. And so maybe we're coming back to what China has always been. And the last 30 or so years have been a little bit of an aberration.
Mm, okay. So how has what's going on with social media, how does that impact the younger generation in China? How do you see that taking shape?
Well, very much I think in the way it is in the West. You have a younger generation that's kind of addicted to their phones. And people are talking about things like internet addiction, people being antisocial because mm-hmm. they're all on their phones and
yeah.
they don't know how to relate to each other. I mean, that's an issue in China too.
Yeah.
I think just with the younger generation across the board, that's an issue. For the Christians in China, it's been interesting because we hear a lot about the Great Firewall and how China is using technology to keep all the bad stuff out of China on the web. So there's a lot of things you can access outside China on the mm-hmm. web. You can't access them in China. But when it comes to the church, there is an incredible amount of activity within China. Christian websites, worship websites, discussion groups, online magazines, and that has really been allowed to flourish. And so the internet has for the first time given the believers in China a way to connect nationwide and share information and ideas with each other and build relationships.
That's powerful then.
So that's been very powerful.
I love hearing good news about internet stories because I almost never do.
No, in the case of the church in China, it's really
that's
been
fantastic.
Revolutionary.
So we can all praise God for that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So what are some of the social trends that you see happening in China?
Well, urbanization, of course, has been the big one.
Okay.
China's gone through the most massive urbanization in the history of the world, probably 300 so million people when it's all said and done.
Wow.
Moving from the countryside to the cities.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
That's a huge number.
So it's meant emergence of a middle class, an urban middle class, higher standard of living, but also very competitive society. So if young people want to actually get married, have a family, and settle down, they've got to have a good job. They've got to be able to get an apartment, maybe even get a car.
Mm-hmm.
And with the standard of living rising and the competitive environment being what it is, that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of pressure on young urban people today to be able to make enough money to get married. Along with that, because of China's one-child policy, there has been a preference for male children rather than female children. And what's that resulted in now is a whole generation of men who are not going to be able to find a wife because there's this big imbalance now
sure.
between men and women. It's estimated there may be as many as 30 million men in China who are not going to be able to find a wife.
Whoa.
That's a big social issue right
there.
That
is a gigantic social issue. I'm just trying to think of this migration of all these people moving. And, I mean, I lived in a 1,100-square-foot condominium for a long time. And I always said I've got 10 pounds of stuff in a 5-pound house. You know, it's bad enough. You know, one person, and that's probably a lot of space in China if you can have 1,100 square feet.
That would be a pretty nice flat.
That would be a nice flat. So I'm just wondering, where are these people going? How are they going to find a place to live?
Right. Well, there's, been, of course, been a huge building boom in China, and they go up. Skyscrapers.
There's only one direction.
50 stories, 60 stories. They go up and they also go out. And so the road that runs around Beijing, there's several what they call ring roads. And when I first went to Beijing in 1985, the third ring road was the outskirts of town. There were not even very many streetlights out there, mm-hmm. and there was farmland beyond that. Now you're out to the sixth ring road and beyond.
Wow.
And all that's just building, condos after condos
yeah.
after.
Very dense, isn't it?
That's where you have to put yeah. people.
So how is the church responding to this gigantic influx of people coming in?
Well, it's done a couple things. For the urban church, there's a new kind of church that's emerged. And it's largely believers who are pretty well educated, have good jobs. Often they came to Christ in college, and then they started fellowships, and those fellowships became churches, and they rent some space and have a church. It's technically not legal.
Yeah.
It's very common in China. Mm-hmm. And it's really given birth to a whole new kind of church. The other side of that would be the urban migrants. And many of them from the countryside come from Christian families.
Mm.
And so they come to the city, and they kind of try to reproduce the rural church that they came from in the cities. But it's a lot harder because they have to find space and such. But you do have this urban migrant church kind of on the outskirts of a lot of the big cities where those folks worship.
Mm-hmm.
And the unfortunate thing is there's really a disconnect. There has not been a lot of interaction between the urban professional church that's arisen and the urban migrant church, which has a lot of needs.
Mm-hmm. So when you're looking at persecution of the church, what is the risk that pastors are facing having church services mm-hmm. for all these migrants coming in?
Well, up until recently, the government has kind of just turned a blind eye towards okay. those unregistered churches, but now that's changed. A new set of regulations went into effect February 1 of this year, and if those regulations are carried out forcefully, it would mean an end to a lot of these standalone unregistered churches.
Mm.
So there's a lot of church leaders in China right now in the cities that are saying, we'd better wait and see what's going to happen here. We better be careful. Some of them are talking about actually having to split up into small groups if they can no longer meet publicly as a large group
mm-hmm.
and actually making plans to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a time of kind of uncertainty for the particularly the unregistered church in China mm-hmm. right now.
My guest is Dr. Brent Fulton, founder and president of China Source and editor-in-chief of China Source Quarterly. We'll take a short break and be back. Welcome back to the show. We've got Dr. Brent Fulton in studio, and we're loving our conversation we were having with him. Founder and president of China Source and the editor-in-chief of China Source Quarterly. Brent, so when we're looking at some of the questions that Chinese Christians will ask, how do they fare relative to some of the questions that struggling American Christians would ask?
You know, as China has modernized, many of the questions have become quite similar.
Okay.
Questions of how do I balance my work and my family and my church life? You know, how do I raise my kids in such a media-saturated uh-huh. culture, such a materialistic culture? Materialism is a huge issue that the China church in China is now facing as China has become so economically prosperous. And, of course, that's an issue for us here in the States. But there are some interesting questions that I think that are different as well. One is for Christian business people because the business environment in China is just so corrupt. And oftentimes when they become believers, they're suddenly faced with, do I keep doing my business the way I've been doing it as a Christian, or am I going to have to stop? Mm. Am I going to have to go out of business? How do I deal with this? And that's a real issue. And so there's business fellowships now around China where business people get together and try to work on those issues.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a real challenge for
yeah.
them.
Yeah, do they find themselves kind of living in two camps? I've got my Christian life and then I got my business life and I'm trying to get those to work together.
Unfortunately, that
kind of
often
like in
can
America.
Happen. Right. But at the same time, I see some neat examples of believers who come – people who come be believers late in life and they're business – successful business people. And they decide, well, I'm a Christian now. I need to tell the people in my company about Jesus. So we're going to have a chapel service every Thursday morning, and we're all going to gather, and we're going to talk about the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was a group of American business Christians who went over and visited some folks in China many years ago, and they came back and they said, you know, they're doing stuff in China. We couldn't get away with that in America if we tried to do that in our companies.
Wow.
And so there are some Christians in China that are just saying, you know, I'm a Christian. I should do this. And you know, how do I integrate my work and my faith?
Mm-hmm. You say in your book that the challenges facing China's Christians are more practical than political. I'm not sure what I know what that means.
Oftentimes when we hear about the church in China, we hear about the persecuted church in China.
Okay.
And we assume that the church's biggest problem is the government. But if you talk to believers in China, most of them would not say that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them would point to more practical issues like our church has grown a lot. We need more leaders.
Mm.
Or our leaders aren't trained as well as they could be. Or, boy, you know, we got a lot of young families in our church now. How do we teach them how to raise their children?
Mm-hmm.
It's practical things like that.
I like that. So you've spent so much time over there, so you're a firsthand, you know it firsthand, which I love. I love going right to the source. So when you think of the opportunities Christians in China had, they have today, what didn't they have 10 or 15 years ago that they're enjoying today?
Well, we mentioned the internet. That
of course, the internet.
One thing.
Yeah, I would say that's probably the biggest thing, wouldn't you?
It's been a game changer for them. The ability to live out their faith in some interesting ways, like Christian publishing, has actually become more possible in the last decade or so.
Mm-hmm.
Things like running a Christian counseling center.
Mm.
And some have even gone into Christian education and tried to start small Christian private schools. Now, as China becomes tighter in recent years, those kinds of things are coming under pressure. But there has been a window in which the Christians have been able to exercise their faith in ways that you would have said 15 years ago, you can't do that in China. But yet you look at them and they're doing it.
That's interesting.
So it's been an interesting season for them.
Yeah. So if you are thinking about serving in China, either long-term or short-term, what kind of information or counsel or encouragement would you offer?
I would say you need to go to chinasource.org.
Okay. Let's just go to chinasource.org for starters. All right.
Because there we have 20 years worth of writing about what does it mean to serve well in China from multiple perspectives of people who've been over there and served in many different capacities.
Mm-hmm.
We also offer some online courses specifically for people who are preparing to go to China,
mm-hmm.
Courses on how to deal with the culture, how to understand the church.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say there's great resources out there, and avail yourself of those resources.
Yeah, when God knocked on your heart's door many, many, many years ago,
mm-hmm.
what was your response? Were you all on board, or were you thinking, Lord, don't send me to China? I like it in America.
Well, I grew up in a very mission-minded church,
okay.
And so I made a commitment in high school that I would be involved in missions unless the Lord directed otherwise.
Yeah.
But I had no idea where.
Okay.
And China was probably the furthest thing from my mind, but the Lord led me to a Chinese gentleman who was doing ministry in Hong Kong, and we got to talking, and it turned out he had some needs in his ministry that I was probably in a position to help meet.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly China went from, someplace out there to, oh, I'm on my way to China. 3 months later, I was in Hong Kong.
And living with a family that didn't speak English.
Yes, that was interesting. Eating all kinds of strange food that I didn't know what it was. And I'd say, you know, what is this? And the answer would come back in Chinese. I didn't understand
right.
it. So my host would kind of make some animal sounds, and then he'd point to a certain part of his body,
uh-huh.
and I'd realize what I'm eating.
No, thank you.
Okay, yeah.
And I suppose there were times when you thought, I'd really like to go out for Chinese food. But over there, every meal is Chinese food, right?
Right.
all right. If I don't know much about the church, and what's one thing you'd want me to know about the church in China?
I would say that the church in China perseveres no matter what.
Love it.
And I think that's the story of the church in China. It's been through so much politically and in other ways, but what we see is the work of the Lord, a miraculous work of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that should give us hope as we look at China.
Yeah. So, Brent, I'm trying to think. Let me do the math. You were then involved 33 years. Were you over there during Tiananmen Square?
I was in Hong Kong that day, and I was supposed to be actually in China, but I ended up not being in China. And I got up the next morning to get on the subway to go to church, and I saw people reading their newspapers and, in many cases, weeping as they realized what had happened in Beijing. And that was supposed to be the 10th anniversary dinner for the organization I was with at the time. We had booked a banquet room for an evening meal. And it was a very somber time. We had our evening meal. We went back to the office and had a prayer time, and it was very sobering.
Mm-hmm. I know listeners can do something as easy as pray today for China. What would you encourage them how to pray regarding China?
I would pray for the steadfastness and the spiritual purity of the church. As China has become so much more materialistic, there's a lot of distractions and a lot of pressures. And they need to hold fast to the truth and to God's word.
Mm-hmm. And to head over to chinasource.org for lots of information.
Yes.
That'd be the place to go. Dr. Brent Fulton has been my guest. He is the founder and president of China Source and the editor-in-chief of China Source Quarterly. Awfully nice of you to come in studio. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much to Dr. Brent Fulton. I loved him in studio today. And also, I just want to say China is a very big place, and we should have a real heart to pray for the brothers and sisters in China and the persecution that they're suffering. You know, China is about the same size as the continental United States, and it has one official time zone. Continental U.S. has four, but I think of 1.3 billion people in the same space. So it's dense over there, and so there's a lot of persecution on the church and a lot of resistance. So we can pray for the pastors. We can pray for the little underground groups and churches that are formed, and pray that people have the courage to be bold about their faith and to have integrity and character, because it sounds like it's hard to do business over there if you're a Christian. So that's probably an issue in America as well. It's probably an issue everywhere. So it's just been a very interesting conversation. I was reading a little something by Tim Keller today, and he was saying, certainly we should be very active in seeking God, and Jesus himself calls us to ask, seek, knock in order to find him. Yet those who enter a relationship with God inevitably look back and recognize that God's grace had sought them out, breaking them open to new realities. So, as we go about our day and our evening, remember that we need to ask and seek and knock and look to God for all of our wisdom, all of our peace. Like Robert Morgan said, don't worry, give God all of your worries. Feed the truth of God into your heart, memorize scripture, and equip yourself to be out in the world and to live for Christ and to give him glory. And remember that God will meet your needs in his way and in his timing. Sometimes you just would like God to answer your prayers exactly how you would like on your time. That almost never happens. But he does love you, and he cares about you, and he's got your best always. So have a great night, everyone, and I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.